The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
They're teaching incorrect grammar to give a kid whatever gender pronoun they want. Psychology tells you that when you're talking about sexuality with kids, their brains are not developed. You have to raise a child, you rear a child. They don't know about sexuality. When an adult pushes some ideas upon them, it winds up grooming them to believe whatever the adult tells them. A man cannot lactate and breastfeed a child. You cannot give birth if you're a man. If you want to be an adult and do whatever you want with your life, I'm okay with that. Don't push this ideology on children. I'm not going to work in a district that's okay with that. This isn't a political indoctrination camp, okay? It's public education. We want to teach education, not left-wing ideas that aren't backed up by facts or science.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I just love that audio. I really do. It says so much. It was honest. It was raw. It was clear. It was direct. It was rational. That was audio of Jonathan Copel. He was a Louisiana teacher who's been speaking up against his school board about what's being taught in public schools, right? We saw what happened with the state of Virginia, right, with their elections. Parents have had enough. A lot of parents today. In fact, let's talk about this. You know, a lot of you might be in this situation. A lot of parents know that public schools are, well, they're in trouble, and this is no way to. I know there's some good teachers out there, and I know there's some good institutions. I want to always be careful. I hate the broad brush, but if you take a look at what's being taught, this is not news to anyone. That's why a lot of parents are showing up to these public school board meetings in greater numbers, and they are opposing many of these initiatives. That's why the Biden administration, they went as far as to call parents terrorists, domestic terrorists. Remember that? We talked about that. That was enough. That was like poking, it was like kicking a beehive. When that went down, that was it. Parents really stood up. They're opposing critical race theory. That's what these parents are doing. The parents have had enough of gender theory being imposed on their kids. They're the primary educators of their kids. They don't want this garbage being taught. You know, you got all these, you know, acronyms out there. You know, you need a dictionary to decipher these. BIPOC, you know what that stands for? BIPOC, you know, have you heard that? Maybe you have. Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. Or what about DEI? You know what DEI stands for? Little abbreviation for diversity, equity, and inclusion. You've heard that, I know. Public educators right now are separating our kids into categories of race and of gender identity, and they're coming up with new ways of causing resentment, and it's a problem. And it's not just public schools. You know, I really do want to make sure that you're aware that it's not just public schools. Even private schools are running into this. There was a pair of educators, a guy named Paul Rossi and Andrew Gutman. They wrote a Wall Street Journal piece recently. And what they did is they watched 100 hours of video from a conference held by the National Association of Independent Schools telling the educators how to implement DEI, right? How you can get those principles into your schools. And just as a side note here, if you switch the words around diversity, equity, and inclusion, somebody said it also stands for DIE, right? D-I-E. If you go diversity, inclusion, and equity, very different acronym. Let me share with you, if I could, a little bit of audio here as well. And this was a report out of California about, well, parents finding out who's been chaperoning their daughters at an elementary school camp. This is what's happening. Check this out.
In the parking lot of Weaver Elementary School in Los Alamitos, a group of parents.
No parent should feel the way I feel after knowing what could have happened to my daughter.
Upset by the sleeping arrangements at a school-organized science camp.
I contacted the school and I asked them if they were able to confirm that there was not a man actually sleeping in the same cabin as the girls. They were not able to confirm that.
The parents say their fifth grade girls told them some of the biologically male counselors at Camp Pally in San Bernardino identified as they, them, and spent three nights sleeping in cabins with the young girls.
They're asleep. They use the shower. They go to the restroom.
Camp Pelley confirms, per California state law, we place staff in cabins they identify with. Parents say they're not accusing anyone of a crime, but they are angry the school district did not let parents know about the policy. A spokesperson told us the district takes all complaints and concerns seriously and is currently investigating.
So from being called domestic terrorists to allowing that type of behavior to take place, it really is tragic. Beyond that, really the biggest concern most people should have is about what these schools are teaching our kids. You know, they're teaching kids that color and sexuality are primary sources of our identities, and that they need to, you know, be resentful of white society because there are microaggressions happening against them all the time. And look, it goes on and on and on. I don't want to fill the room with my own thought. You're more than welcome to join me. I want to allow into the conversation one of the brightest men that I know, somebody who I learned a lot from, and who one day I hope will sit on the Supreme Court. His name's Professor Robert George. He's the McCormick Professor of Jurisprudence and the director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. He's been with us in the past, and it's always good to tap into his genius, his expertise, his insights on these cultural issues that threaten us on so many levels. Professor, good afternoon. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
Well, good afternoon, Drew. It's a pleasure to be back on the show.
A lot of parents around the country, Professor, are now rebelling. I shared just a little bit. There's so much more I could have thrown on the table for you know, digestion. But you know, we're seeing what's happening with school boards and how they're implementing, you know, bizarre policies in public schools across the country. What are you seeing? I mean, this is your area of academia as well. I know you are also a cultural observer. Give me your sense of what's happening both in the cultures, in our academic institutions, and whether or not it's reached a tipping point.
Well, I'm seeing what you're seeing, Drew, and what anyone who's watching is seeing. That's an awful lot of people these days. People are seeing a parent's rebellion. They're seeing a parent's rebellion against the imposition on their children in public schools, in private schools, even in private religiously affiliated schools, even in some Catholic schools, the imposition of an ideology that is simply antithetical to their own often faith-based beliefs and principles and values and morals. And parents are rightly not taking it anymore. They've now become fully aware of this indoctrination, and they're standing up and saying, we're not going to put up with it anymore. I think any parent who knows that this is going on in the schools and where the ideology being imposed is antithetical to their own beliefs has an obligation. An obligation to get their kids the heck out of that school. And again, I don't care whether it's a public school, mm-hmm. whether it's a private school, whether it's a parochial school. If kids are being indoctrinated, if they're being sent home to parents who can't recognize them because of the ideology that they have had inculcated in them, then those parents really need to get those kids out of the school. And the parents need to find schools that will truly educate and not indoctrinate. And parents need to be in the vanguard, as they are with this rebellion, of reforming schools where this is going on. And by the way, it is going on in what are regarded as the most prestigious schools in the country. This is not just in rundown, poor inner city schools right. or anything like that. Not at all. This is at Andover and Exeter and St. Paul's, at the great boarding schools like those. It's in the most elite, desirable private schools. And as I say, it's in some religiously affiliated schools.
Yeah, I sit back and I see these stories crop up. I see what's being taught with critical race theory and gender fluidity and all these other type of things. I just wonder, how did we get to this point? I mean, how did we get to the point that this has become so mainstream and so accepted? What was the driving force behind this, and how did parents and families miss it?
Well, it's a very long story. Gosh, where to begin? You end up back at the Garden of Eden if you keep pushing. Uh-huh. But certainly, what we're observing is what Rudy Dutschke, which is probably a name not familiar to your listeners. Rudy Dutschke, who was an activist and left-wing intellectual in the 1960s, called for the Long March Through the Institutions. Dutschke and others on the left, Herbert Marcuse, for example, saw that the workers' revolution that they hoped for and longed for and thought was inevitable was not only not inevitable, it was not going to come at all. And so they changed strategies. They proposed a different strategy, the strategy of the long march through the institutions. And that is a strategy essentially of insinuating people who share their left-wing beliefs, especially left-wing cultural beliefs, beliefs that are antithetical to the norms and principles of the Judeo-Christian tradition, the norms and principles of the American constitutional tradition, insinuating people who share their beliefs into positions of authority in the great institutions of the land, from corporations to philanthropies to churches, but definitely and first and foremost in education. The ideas were incubated in the universities and flowed from there, including to K-12 education. And it was all going on for people to see, but most people missed it. And gradually, it became the orthodoxy in many, many schools. It's much more well-known in universities. People knew what was going on there, but many people knew what was going on in universities, didn't realize it was going on in schools, even in the schools where their own children and grandchildren were attending. Well, now we know. Everyone knows. If you haven't had your eyes closed, completely shut, for the last year or so, you know.
Yeah, it's not just schools either. But we're seeing this on so many different strata right now in our culture. This whole diversity, equity, and inclusion thing is being promoted in our educational institutions, over social media. A lot of big companies are behind that. And those principles, if you call them that, are pretty much, you know, what we're hearing about in public schools. Teachers now are teaching kids about color and sexuality. And again, as I had pointed out, it's kind of they're underlining this as the primary source of their identity, which I think is a real tragedy. And as a result, we're seeing resentment of white society. They claim there's all these microaggressions happening all the time. There was one workshop professor that I saw, and I want to quote from it for you. I mean, what's your take on this? They taught that failing to explore the intersection of science, technology, engineering, math, and social justice constitutes an act of curriculum violence. And here's what this one instructor also said. He said, quote, "Decolonizing white supremacy culture thinking is an ongoing act of deconstructing, dismantling, disrupting those colonial ideologies and the superiority of Western thought. No longer are private schools focused primarily on teaching critical thinking, fostering intellectual curiosity, and rewarding independent thought. Their new mission is to train a vanguard of activists to lead the charge in tearing down the foundations of society reminiscent of Maoist China's Red Guards." Your thoughts on that? Do you think there's truth in that?
Oh, yeah, there's truth in that. And you put your finger on the driver here. It's an identitarian ideology that functions, as John McWhorter rightly points out, as a kind of new religion, a new neo-pagan religion, which has become dominant on the left and in elite sectors of society. It's highly subjectivist. The idea is that you dictate your own identity, you build your own identity, you build it primarily around features such as race and sex, which of course they want to transform into the concept of gender. We shouldn't get hung up on things like labels, like critical race theory.
Right.
That's a phrase that's tossed around. It's very ambiguous. It means different things to different people. It began in the 1970s as an approach to law. I studied it myself, among many other theories, economic theories of law, natural law theories, which is my own area, and so forth. And I've taught the classic writers in critical race theory in their texts, and I've taught them fairly and without denigrating them, but exposing them, as I expose all points of view to my students, to critical evaluation. But then a lot of other stuff goes under the label of critical race theory. So I don't want to get hung up on terms like that or phrases or labels. The real problem, the new religion, the ideology, the woke ideology, is one, as you say, that makes race a central feature of your identity, whether you like it or not, but race is made a central feature of your identity. So is so-called gender, central feature of your identity. And of course, a central part of that ideology is the idea that somewhere deep inside you, accessible and knowable only to you, is something called a gender identity. Now, you know, your grandfather didn't know he had a gender identity. Your great-grandmother didn't know she had a gender identity. But under this theory, they did and just didn't know it. But that's what really made them a man or a woman. It wasn't their biological reality. It was their subjective inner sense of gender identity. And there was absolutely no philosophically sound reason, much less a scientific reason, for believing in such a thing as gender identity. And yet it's a dogma of the new religion, and people are punished if they don't go along with it.
That's really well said. My guest today, Professor Robert George. If you want to join us, I only have him for a few moments. Let me give you the number. You can share your thoughts, ask your questions, join the conversation at 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. And I'll go to the calls in a moment. As you're talking about race, and maybe you can't address this, maybe you don't want to address it. I'm just thinking of some of the of President Biden, and one of the criteria for his Supreme Court pick was the pigment of someone's skin. I mean, he vowed to put to look at all black women. I think he's spoken to three of them already that are the lead contenders right now. What are your thoughts on that? I'm not opposed to anybody being a Supreme Court justice as long as they are formed well in both law and have a moral mind and moral heart. To say, I'm only going to look at a black woman for this position, what do you make of that assessment? What message does that send to the country, too?
Well, of course, this is not a new idea with President Biden, nor is it a novel feature of woke ideology. Ethnic politics, what might be called identity politics, has played a role for many, many decades. It has been played by both political parties and by people across the ideological spectrum. I don't know if you know this, Drew, but for a long time, for several decades, it was regarded as just part of the normal course of things that there would be one seat on the Supreme Court that would be the Jewish seat and one seat on the Supreme Court that would be the Catholic seat. And those seats were awarded to a Jewish person, a Catholic person, for political reasons to signal to Jews and Catholics that they had a place at the table here. I guess in the beginning it was Louis Brandeis had the Jewish seat, then Benjamin Cardozo, then Felix Frankfurter, then Arthur Goldberg. Mm-hmm. The Catholic seat was held by Frank Murphy during the New Deal. I think it was the first Justice White before that. And then by Justice Brennan, who was appointed to the Catholic seat in the 1950s. So there's nothing new with the idea that there will be a black seat or even a black woman seat. That's playing out the normal politics. But it's playing it out here, of course, in the context of woke ideology. So the expectation, the demand here is not simply that the individual happen to be black and female. It's that they be a particular sort of black female person. That is one who goes along with what, according to this ideology, black females are supposed to think. You know, there's no room for deviation here. All that matters for checking the boxes initially are skin color and sex. But then the most important thing is conformity to woke ideology.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, I know last time, I think, maybe not the last time, I had Colonel West, who's a good friend of you, on the air with me one time. And I know you're best of friends, even with disagreements about major things. Share, if you could, Professor, how he's helped you to develop your thinking about the race issue in our country. And can your friendship serve maybe as a model for maybe a, I don't know, a better way of dealing with race?
Yeah, Cornell is very interesting. He's certainly a man of the left. In fact, he's a self-identified socialist. He's the honorary chairman of the Democratic Socialists of America. And yet, because he's a really fine intellectual and a morally serious person, mm-hmm. and a Christian himself, yeah. he takes a critical perspective on woke ideology. He sometimes characterizes it in his wonderful style in this way. He says, some people are so woke that they've given themselves insomnia. and I think that's right. That's his way of saying, look, you're going overboard with this kind of thing. We're it's been very helpful to me in discussing racial issues with Cornell, because he's given me an appreciation, which I otherwise, I think, wouldn't have had, of the sense in which the history of blacks in America, going all the way back into the slave period, gave rise, understandably, to a certain sort of culture, not alien to American culture, but a part of, albeit a distinctive part of, American culture, in the same way there's a distinctive American Catholic culture and a distinctive American Jewish culture. And that culture has achievements in various areas, literature, art, music, worthy of studying and worthy of celebrating. So, there is a distinctive type of music that is associated with people like Duke Ellington. And it did matter that Duke Ellington was black and came out of a certain experience. He had an experience that was different from Benny Goodman's Jewish experience. Same with the literature of people from Ellison, for example, Ralph Ellison to Toni Morrison, and in other areas. So just as there are Jewish and Catholic and other groups that have certain American cultures and achievements, traditions, bodies of literature, music, art, and so forth, the same is true with the black community in America. Now, that doesn't mean isolation, and Cornell is very good about this. That does not mean segregation or self-segregation.
Right.
That doesn't mean that only blacks can appreciate the music of Duke Ellington. Duke Ellington belongs to everybody. Cornell would be the first, is the first to say that, in the same way that Shakespeare belongs to everybody. Shakespeare doesn't just belong to white people or belong to English people. Shakespeare belongs to black people. Shakespeare belongs to all people. And yet he comes in a particular time, in a particular place, and if we're going to locate him in a particular tradition, we would say it's the tradition of English literature, wouldn't we? It's not Spanish literature. It's not Italian literature. It's within this tradition that includes Chaucer and Milton and Evelyn Waugh and on and on.
Professor, let me go to the phones. I know we only have you for a few moments. Sue in Chicago has a comment for you and wants to join the conversation too. Sue, thank you for waiting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you for taking my call. My concern about this, you know, some of the gender issues is, I know, you know, with the she, her, and picking your own gender, but I'm calling more from a perspective of safety. I was myself sexually abused, and I was put in a position to be with an older boy, and I shouldn't have been in that position. And we've just gotten through the Me Too woman, where we hear about all this abuse going on, yet we think it's just okay that men and women, girls and boys, should all just be one in one room together with no safety measures. That's the part that I just don't understand, how we can think that's okay.
Well, you're right not to understand it. You're right not to understand it because it doesn't make any sense. Can't understand things that don't make any sense. Men, boys do not belong in women's and girls' sports, for example. They don't belong in women's and girls' private spaces, certainly places like homeless shelters, for example, or prisons. Certainly don't belong in girls' shower rooms or bathrooms. And, you know, this ideology now is imposing the idea that so long as someone subjectively identifies himself as female, that makes him really female. That's that inner sense of gender identity that I was talking about earlier, in which case he belongs in women's spaces, whether those are prisons, whether those are homeless shelters, shower rooms. He belongs in women's sports. And, you know, we're seeing the consequences of that. And I hope now that we're beginning to see the consequences of that, people will sober up about it. The trouble is that the woke left has everybody intimidated. People are afraid to speak the truth out loud because they fear they'll be canceled. They'll be subjected to personal or professional retaliation. Their children will be harmed, or their children will be ostracized. And, you know, those are legitimate worries. But, hey, folks, we need some courage out here. We need to be willing to seek the truth and then speak the truth as God gives us to see the truth. And the truth is, boys and men do not belong in women's sports or women's bathrooms or women's shower rooms or women's spaces. That's the truth, and we need to be courageous enough to speak it.
Amen to that. Professor, I'm grateful for your time. My apologies, everybody on hold. I know how busy you are. I hope you'll come back again. It's been too long, and I'm always grateful to sit here and to listen and to learn from you. Thank you, Sue, for calling in as well, and Roy and Joanne and everybody else. Professor, we'll catch up soon, okay? Again, thanks. If people want to follow you, by the way, before I let you go, how can they follow your writing, your insights, your work?
Well, they can follow me on Twitter. I'm active there. They can visit my website. That's robertpgeorge.com. I hope I'm right about that. robertpgeorge.com. My Facebook friend limit has been reached, but I believe you can nevertheless follow me on Facebook.
Well, Professor, I'm going to hold it right there. Thank you for being here. We'll catch up soon.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Get caught up on that conversation you missed by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just select The Drew Mariani Show.
Yeah, that's a great resource for you. If you say, man, I wish I heard that whole conversation. Maggie will have today's show up probably about an hour after we sign off. That's about 30 minutes from now. I'm running out of time with you today. And there's always so much to talk about. Hey, and there's also great conversation you might have missed. You can go back to the podcast and check it out. RelevantRadio.com. Go to my show page and there you'll find all that goodness. You can also go to other places where podcasts are hosted and find the show there. Please tell others about it and feel free to join me. You know, I'm always trying to give you a look at life that you won't find anywhere else. And if you're a teacher, and I've got family members who are teachers, I have friends that are university professors, and I want to talk tenure, okay? I want to talk about tenure right now, and this is an issue that I understand the purpose of it and how valuable it is to protect academic freedom, but I got to tell you a story, and I'll lay this out for you, and then Matt Lamb's going to be stopping by. We'll get his take, and we'll take some of your calls. We just got done talking to Professor George, brilliant man, right? And we talked about critical race theory, and all these other type of theories that are being advanced. These types of things didn't develop out of elementary and high schools. You know where they came from? They're introduced, they're advanced, they're promoted by professors at colleges and universities. Many of those professors were teaching in gender and race theory programs that developed starting back in the 1970s. So their theories came on the heels of the civil rights and the women's empowerment movements. And you know, most people think of the civil rights movement, they think of Martin Luther King. You know, there were others like Malcolm X, you know, who conflicted with King, or you know, Malcolm X philosophy was more aligned, I would argue, with a communist theory than with the Black Power movement. But you know, the theory and a movement based on, again, what we're seeing today, really resentment against whites for injustice carried out during the time of the Jim Crow era and slavery. So, you know, later thinkers took those thoughts, they developed them in such a way that we now have things like the 1619 Project, and I've spoken about that before in the past, which is again, that's, I'm going to call it what it is, it's wacky. I mean, it redefines when America was actually founded, right? It redefines the terms of this great nation's founding from the seeking of freedom, right, to wanting to enslave blacks. That was not what the Revolutionary War was fought over. That's not what brought the Puritans and the Pilgrims to this land. It's a twisting of history. That's what this stuff is. So the professors who developed this line of thinking, guess what? They all have tenure, lifetime appointments to the faculty, whatever institution they're teaching at. And 10 years, you know, it's a longstanding tradition in higher education. And you know, the purpose of it is good. It's meant to give professors the ability to teach as they see fit without interference from the administration. Imagine if the administration didn't like what you were teaching. They constantly were coming down. I don't like this. I don't like that. It would limit the academic freedom that professors should have. The only way professors would have tenure, you know, the only way a tenured professor, I should say, can be fired is if they do something really egregious, right? At least that's the way it's supposed to be. Today, we are seeing that tenured professors who question the narrative that is being pushed by these institutions of higher learning, they're being fired, and fired at the drop of a hat. Saw a story the other day, and the reason I wanted to talk to Matt about this and talk to you about it is the Texas Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick. He is proposing that young professors hired at state schools in the Lone Star State there shouldn't be given tenure at all, especially if they're teaching critical race theory. He said this at a press conference on Friday, and I'll just quote him. He said, quote, "Go to a private school, let them raise their own funds to teach. We're not going to fund them. I'm not going to pay for this nonsense," end of quote. Well, the reaction from both sides was pretty extreme. It made me think, you know, let's talk about tenure. But then again, let's also talk about the 1619 Project and critical race theory and all of this other wackiness that is now indoctrinating our kids, this gender fluidity and all the rest of the stuff that they're being indoctrinated with. I'm joined right now by the associate editor of the College Fix at collegefix.com, Matt Lamb. He's associate editor there, and it's great to have him here with us this afternoon to give us some perspective on the issue. Matt, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
So tenure is something that anyone who starts teaching at a college, they want to get. Very simply, it means job security. I like the idea. I have family members that are teachers. As I said, I have friends that are university professors. But again, it doesn't matter what viewpoint you hold. So what's the idea of denying tenure to new hires, and what difference does that actually make? Because doesn't it take a little while before you get tenure?
Right. So, I haven't read every single thing about his proposal, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, but, I would be clear, it's not really a denial of tenure. It sounds like he's getting rid of tenure for the future. And I think what's really important here to note is that, no one has an inherent right to tenure or a lifetime job. No one's born with a right to be a tenured professor at, Texas Tech or University of Texas, right? And so I think what's really important is this broader discussion that that Lieutenant Governor Patrick made is the idea that, he is an elected official, and he represents the interests of Texans. And I think it's really important, especially with public universities, how he is saying, look, I represent, the faculty at UT Austin can't just say, well, let us do whatever we want. Well, wait a minute, you get paid by the taxpayers, right? Whether it's tuition, state funding, federal funding. So I think it's absolutely appropriate for him to weigh in on how he would like the university run, whether that's we're not going to teach critical race theory, we're not going to offer tenure. And then there can be a debate and a discussion. Does it make it easier to attract different talent? Maybe the universities find they can't attract good talent without tenure. We'll go back and forth. And that's how a political system is supposed to work, of course.
So if tenure is done away with, doesn't that open, wouldn't that make hiring and firing based on the administration's viewpoint at that point in time? What would it do to academic freedom for the person who's coming in and say, hey, I want the liberty, the ability to teach the way I want to teach and help form these students. Now, again, it comes down to, it would come down to the administration's viewpoint on what they think is appropriate to be taught. But what would happen if it was done away with?
Well, it's a great question. So what we can do, of course, is look at, other places outside of academia and what happens if you go and work for a corporation where you don't have tenure. Maybe you work at a major research corporation, maybe you work at a Facebook, or you work at a nonprofit, a think tank, right? Well, you have to, your employer has expectations. On the flip side, they also, of course, want to attract the best talent. So, would it make it easier to fire people? Well, of course, because tenure makes it almost impossible to fire professor. So obviously getting rid of tenure, would make it a bit harder. But we also have to remember that, this is, the engineering professors, they don't really need to worry about it. The chemistry professors, the biology professors. And, the same faculty council at UT Austin mm-hmm. has been promoting this idea of if you want to get hired here, you have to, basically take a diversity pledge, a loyalty oath. Wow. To diversity, equity, inclusion. So their support for academic freedom is not really universal. It's academic freedom if you support this critical race theory, you know, liberal ideas on race and gender and sexuality.
Yeah, obviously, critical race has serious problems, right? That's causing division in our society. Should the state be censoring that viewpoint? I mean, we see, of course, those on the left, they want to censor those on the right. More conservative institutions, do you think they would do the same thing? Would it be payback? I mean, how do you see that, you know, playing out? Does that make sense to you?
It's a great question. I think I would take a little issue with the idea of censoring. So going back to what I said at the beginning, you know, universities are created for a purpose, and through the years, the programs they offer will change, the degrees and certificates. You know, UT Austin wasn't offering a computer science degree in 1935, I'm sure, right? Who knows what they'll be offering in 2050. So there's plenty of programs and degrees and classes that are, you know, not offered. I'm sure you can't take the class on, you know, Roman Catholicism, the traditional Latin math at UT Austin, right? So I have no problem, you know, from a practical sense, a political sense, with a university through the Board of Governors, the trustees, the state, you know, however their system is set up, saying, look, we're just not going to fund programs and classes in critical race theory. We're also not going to fund, you know, a class on skiing or skateboarding. Mm-hmm. You know, not that those are exactly equal, of course. And I think that is totally fair in a democratic republic for the governor and lieutenant governor to make those views known. I mean, you mentioned 1619 Project, and I think, you know, I'm personally Catholic. Of course, College Fix isn't necessarily religious, but, you know, this idea of the truth. Well, the 1619 Project is just frankly untruthful about America's founding. Does Nicole Anna Jones have a right to teach falsehood? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a wonderful point. My guest today, if you want to join us, Matt Lamb, feel free to sound off. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Joanne is listening in Highland, New York. She's got a comment for you, Matt. Joanne, good afternoon.
Hi, I just wanted to make just a general comment about another option that parents have as far as all the problems that are going on in the schools, and that is to homeschool. And I know to a lot of parents and people it seems really foreign or like, oh my gosh, how could I do that? But you can, and if you want to instill your Catholic or other Christian values into your child and raise them and form them in their faith, then homeschooling is an excellent way to do that. And then you don't have to worry about the schools pushing their ideologies, pushing their values, pushing all of their craziness onto your children.
Well, Joanna, thanks for bringing that up. Matt, maybe you can respond too. I mean, I can understand homeschooling at the, you know, the grade school level, the high school level. What do parents do when it gets to those higher levels of education? Because that's really where a lot of this craziness is coming from. Not that we haven't seen it trickle down, because we're seeing it even in grade school right now. But to Joanne's point, what about parents taking greater responsibility and maybe doing some of the educating themselves?
Well, no, it's great. I mean, I teach at a homeschool co-op. I totally agree with her. You know, a lot of stuff is happening K-12. And then I definitely think for college, of course, you know, we could also talk about student loan debt, right? And I think it is great for parents and students to look into these options. You know, I know, for example, Franciscan Steubenville offers some courses that, you know, homeschool or really any high schooler can take. It might be maybe your local community college hasn't gone as, you know, into these theories, and you can take your class in math and whatever the program you want without necessarily getting bogged down in a lot of these classes and save a lot of money, frankly. So I definitely think, you know, homeschooling K-12 and then looking at college, trade school is great for some people. Yeah. Obviously, if you want to be a nurse or a teacher or something else, that's, you know, you're going to have to go to college, and there's great Catholic universities, you can look at community colleges, online options, you know, there's Hillsdale, you know, Liberty, and So yeah, just look at your options for sure.
Lots of choices. Hey, Matt, thank you. I got to take a short pause here. Joanna, thanks for waiting so long. Thanks for what you're doing. When we come back, let's talk more. We're going to open the phones. Final segment of the show today. If you are in college or university and you've seen this craziness, feel free to share with us what you've gone through. If you are a teacher, you are more than welcome to join us too. I'd love to get your take on tenure and maybe even what the pressures you're getting from some of the administrations. We're taking a look today at denying tenure to young professors. That's been proposed by Lieutenant Governor. Our conversation will continue when I return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. Thanks for joining me. Always good to talk with you. Today, taking a look at tenure, a longstanding tradition in higher education meant to give professors the ability to teach as they see fit without interference from the administration. I'm joined today by Matt Lamb, and we are taking a look at something that was proposed by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, who said that young professors hired at state schools in Texas, they shouldn't be given tenure, especially if they're going to teach things like critical race theory. Listen to what he had to say. The Lieutenant Governor is vowing actually legislation to prevent critical race theory from being taught in Texas colleges and universities. This comes after UT Austin created a resolution to give faculty academic freedom to teach any social issue that they want. So as a result, he says, you know what? I'm going to remove tenure to defiant personnel. Listen.
Tenure to these professors who voted 41-5, telling the taxpayers and the parents and the legislature and your own Board of Regents to get out of their business, that we have no say in what you do in the classroom. You've opened the door for this issue because you went too far. So what we will propose to do is end all tenure for all new hires.
The Lieutenant Governor wanting to change the rules around tenure in Texas, including annual rather than six-year reviews. And Patrick promising the next legislature will take further action.
The law will change to say teaching critical race theory is prima facie evidence of good cause for tenure revocation.
Several other states have attached the critical race theory label to a broad range of racial topics far beyond its origins as a college-level academic concept, and have taken steps to ban CRT in public schools. The Lieutenant Governor with a warning to UT after hearing how the school used a state grant to develop CRT lessons for fourth graders.
The University of Texas better get out of that business. They better watch the money we send them and what they do with it.
Wow, fourth graders. That to me is, that's wild. Matt Lamb joins me, associate editor of the College Fix. Check him out at collegefix.com. Matt, thank you for joining us. Let's do this. Let's jump right back into the phones. We'll take some calls. Felix is listening in Garden Grove, California. Hi, Felix. You are on the air.
Hi, thank you. You're welcome. I just wanted to bring my perspective. I'm a recent graduate history major. And definitely tenure did come into play with a lot of professors that I took. They had no problem spewing a lot of the CRT theories. Most of history they viewed was from race. And it really, there was no challenge to it. And a lot of the students in the courses that I took just ate it up. They had no other perspective. And I think it's really unfortunate because I just love this country. This country has, it's beautiful. There's good and bad with it, but with a lot of the tenured teachers, they just only want to look at the bad and how, and it really is unfortunately about hating on white people. And that was sort of my experience in my university. So that's kind of the comment I wanted to bring.
I'm grateful for you sharing that. It's good to hear, history and your particular discipline, I'm sure, is plagued by this type of ideology. There's no doubt about it. How do you feel about tenure? I mean, I'm sure as a teacher you probably want it, but what do you think of the move that the lieutenant governor is proposing? I think I lost Felix. I did. Nope, he's with me. Felix, I'm sorry. Oh. I think I put you on. Go right ahead. That was me. Go ahead, Felix. You're
okay,
on here.
Yeah, I think there could be some positives, especially I heard in the quote that you just had about yearly reviews. I think that could be a strong incentive for teachers to sort of stay in the middle. From my own perspective, there's a lot of teachers that I had that just had no problem spewing their beliefs mm-hmm. that had no relevance to the class. So I think right. that would leave the teachers in check. So I think there could be some positives with that move.
It's a great suggestion. Felix, thank you. And Matt, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Is there a middle ground? Yeah, I'm not a fan of doing away with tenure. I'm also not a fan of letting teachers teach things that really are just, they're not true, like the 1619 Project, you know, or even critical race in some respects. So how do we find a middle ground?
Yeah, a couple things. So one, actually, I think it's actually for 4- and 5-year-old kids, not fourth graders, that UT Austin yeah. program, because gotcha. We reported on it, or maybe yeah. there's two.
No, you're right.
Programs.
No, you're right.
But I think it's actually a great point. So one thing that maybe we could talk about is better oversight of the funding of specific grant programs. So not spending $100,000, you know, teaching 4-year-olds that they're racist. This wouldn't affect wow. a professor in the classroom in front of college students, right? It would just affect the use of taxpayer dollars going to university to teach, you know, little kids. To your point, I mean, I actually am a big supporter, I think, for, you know, you hear these terrible stories of adjunct instructors, these young college graduates with PhDs have to teach. Sometimes they don't find out if they're going to teach a course till the night before the semester starts. So I personally am a fan of longer contracts for universities, maybe 1- or 2-year contracts or 3- or 4-year contracts. Mm-hmm. I think that would actually help with the tenure situation and would also help with young instructors and, you know, adjuncts have a bit more stability. Right. But at the end of the day, look, I've been an at-will employee, you know, actually my whole life. And if you don't perform, then you don't have a job. And I do understand that it's not as objective, you know, if you're a chemistry professor, you know, how do you judge if you're a good chemistry professor? Mm-hmm. Well, you look at performance reviews, you could look at how students do on tests, mm-hmm. You could look at the research you do. And so I think other places have systems of performance right. reviews, feedback, and wanting the best talent that I do think you could figure out a way that professors are on the tips of their toes. They have some stability, but also there's accountability.
Right. All right. Mary in Minnesota, I'm going to squeeze you in as well before we run out of time here. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. Well, I just had a comment. You know, you guys were talking about CRT, and we enrolled our kids into a Catholic high school, and they have said many different things have happened in school, but in particular this year we had this VeggieTale video that was showed in reconciliation, and that they and when I confronted the school about it, they just told me that they're sorry to hear that I'm uncomfortable with racism. And then while discussing with other parents, they said last year they did Stations of the Cross, in which they're comparing George Floyd to. When I asked the school, well, how do you compare those two things in Latin, in a Stations of the Cross, it was once again, well, you know, we're sorry that you're uncomfortable with the way that we're dealing with racism here in the school, but we have all these programs in touch in the school. And I didn't know where to go after this. Mm. So as far as I don't know. What do you do?
Thank you, Mary. Let me give Matt the final words here. Matt, I'll let you respond. I only got about a moment or two left for you.
I'm sorry it happened. I would find a new parish, an Institute of Christ the King or a fraternity parish, frankly. And yeah, but I mean, I'm glad at least in a private setting, you can, you know, pull your students out. And I'm sorry that happened to you. And yeah, that's all. I mean, I'm glad you stepped up and made your voices heard.
That's some bizarre stuff. George Floyd, you know, and the Stations of the Cross. I mean, I understand people's intentions. They probably mean well, but in a Catholic institution, that's concerning. Hey, Matt, thank you for your time. CollegeFix.com. That's the best way to track you down and get in touch.
Yes, thecollegefix.com. Bookmark us, follow us on social media, sign up for our email.
That sounds great. Hey, appreciate you spending time with us today and for your perspective. Look forward to the next time, okay?
Yep, thanks for having me.
You got it. It's Matt Lamb, and you can check him out, thecollegefix.com. I think I was forgetting the. Hey, I've got less than a minute with you today, and I just want to thank you for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. And Kel Clark is coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned for him. Father Rocky will pray the rosary tonight at 7, so get plugged into that if you need a little extra prayer. And, of course, I'm back in about 21 hours. Give you another look at life you won't get anywhere else. In fact, tomorrow, I do want to take a look at a few things, especially when it comes to COVID. You know, there's been talk about masks, and we've talked about them a lot. The CDC is lowering speech standards for toddlers. I don't know if you heard about that or not. Do masks affect a child's speech and language development? We'll look at that. We'll give you the latest on COVID and whether or not we are totally out of it. Plus, Bill Gates said COVID, the risks, they're drastically reduced, but he's warning about another pandemic that is coming. So I'll fill you in on that for sure. Kellen's Father Rocky coming on in just a moment. Bulls broadcaster Chuck Swirsky. So stay tuned for that. I'm out of time. I want to share with you tomorrow, too, a little something about the Olympics and the ratings from NBC. I'll lead off with that tomorrow, so be sure and join me. Until then, have a great day, okay? Look forward to talking with you again.